We left off last time on Chasgimel on the days near the bottom. And the Gemara there is talking about what to do with your tefillin if you have your tefillin around at night. Now, we rarely encounter this because we are materially better off and we generally have multiple rooms and more space. And more places, cabinets to put things in, shelves to put things on. But here you're talking about in a culture where typically there might have only been one room in the house, which, by the way, leads to interesting questions. Like, you're not allowed, unless you have covers for a Sefer Torah and Tefillin, to be engaged in sexual intercourse in a room where there's a Sefer Torah and Tefillin unless they're properly covered. The question is, what do you do about a mezuzah in such a room? So the Aruch HaShulchan talks, it's spoken about by the Achronim in Yerodeah and the laws of Mezuzah. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, obviously, there can't be an issue by Mezuzah, because otherwise, these are two mitzvahs that have to coexist. You have to put a mezuzah on your house, and you have to at least engage in Pur Revu and the mitzvah of Ona. So obviously, and their mezuzahs may not have been cases like our cases. Like, their mezuzah might literally have been just in a hole in the wall, and you just put the mezuzah in the thing. So the mezuzah is exposed. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, obviously, that's not a violation of Kedushas Mezuzah, because that's the way it has to be. As opposed to Tefillin, or Sefer Torah, where you need to cover them, however you're going to cover them, we're going to talk about some of these things. So for us, it tends to rarely be an issue.
Hotel.
What's that?
Hotel.
Right, it can come up there, right? Or if you live in a studio apartment, you might have some of these issues. But again, we also tend to have an hotel room. You have dressers. You can put it in the dresser, and that will solve the problem. And you're probably not carrying the Sefer Torah to the hotel. Although I was in a hotel for Shabbos for Bar Mitzvah, and they brought the Sefer Torah, so I don't know where it was stored when it wasn't in the Arum. So you can have even that. So for us, these are issues like, what do I do with my tefillin? The answer is, my tefillin would never be in my bedroom. We have a Sefer Torah. It has a dedicated place for it in the house. And that's not in any living space.
It's covered. I mean, Sefer Torah has usually double
right,
covering.
Except for that, the catch will still be that the Aron is Tashmishi Kedusha, probably. Unless, that's an interesting question.
So you show, and its own bag would be the same thing?
The tefillin bag would be the same thing, yes. Right? In other words, tefillin, just because it's in even probably two bags, let's say your tefillin
is in your
felt or velvet,
right,
yeah, and then a plastic, because they're dedicated for it, that's insufficient. You would need one more cover. And I believe that one cover that's not dedicated to the tefillin, I think, is enough. Maybe you're allowed to have one regular and one irregular. I'll have to check on that. But for most of us, in most contexts, and this does come up a little bit, depending how you relate to the nature of the Kedusha Sfarim, in bookcases, that could be an issue.
Rabbi Weider, this is serious off on my set. You're saying that tefillin in a felt bag in a nightstand drawer is not enough covering?
No. I say tefillin in the felt bag in a outer plastic bag, the bag that always lives in. Right? We assume at least the conceptual principle that will operate here is that a regular covering almost becomes part, but that's insufficient to say the tefillin's no longer in the same place as me.
Okay, so if you get to a hotel and you take out your tefillin, which are in the felt bag, in the plastic bag, and put them on the dresser, that is not sufficient.
Correct. I believe not.
And if it's a Torah that has a cover on it, a mantle, and that's in a mini orange, that's not.
I'm pretty sure we talk about the Dvar Shel Kedusha, which has the Shem Hashem, which is the Sefer Torah, and then we talk about Tashmishi Kedusha. Tashmishi Kedusha would be the things they're contained within. Now, as a question with the Sefer Torah, so the mantle, I assume, is Tashmish Kedusha, not the Kedusha itself. I would even guess the Atzei Chaim should be Tashmishi Kedusha. Now, we do say, though, that Tashmish doesn't have Kedusha. But I'm pretty sure the Aron does. And I don't know, I have to figure out why, because it's not directly touching.
The Tashmish said does
not have Kedusha.
So why is the plastic bag?
What's that?
So why is the second bag?
I don't know whether or not the second bag has Kedusha, whether it's called Tashmish to Tashmish or not. It might be because they're always used kind of together. That may be why the Aron, I think, also has Tashmish Kedusha.
Okay,
but nonetheless, for covering purposes, it may be insufficient. Yeah.
Rabbi, if I just go one more round with you. So what if for,
one?
If you're like, one more round. Like, so this is like serious hassle. You go to a hotel, let's say there's no drawers. Can you wrap your plastic and then sell fill and bag in a t-shirt? And like, that's a third kisui that's considered sufficient?
That should be fine.
Now, can you wrap it in your talus, or is the talus itself tashmidim?
Talus should be fine. Talus has no kedusha.
But what about the fill and box? That covers it.
But the ritzuas, that's what I wanted to ask.
But the ritzuas, is that the...
Ritzuas have kedusha. Rashi, we saw this, you mentioned this recently, I think because they're turned into a shame, have the osius of the shame, may be, I don't know, I'm not even sure if the ritzuas of Hashmisha Kedusha, they might be Kedusha.
But if you put them in your talus bag, you're good.
You should be good in your, unless you always store them that way. If you don't normally store them
always store them that way, then that's also considered
I'm pretty sure the halacha is that no matter how many kisuyim that you have for the tefillin, if those are the regular covers of the tefillin, that's not a hefsek. You need one non.
Wow.
You don't need double? I thought you need two.
You might need two, but one of them can be the regular.
The regular?
Cover. Yeah. But if it's all the regular covers. So I will believe either make a promise, and you'll hold me for this. You can ask questions. When we finish these Gemaras, which will be at the end of the parak, not so long, I will try to give one shiur in halacha to sort of pick out the parts of the Shulchan Aruch that deal with these scenarios. We can work through that.
Just a quick question: what about the Gemara that questions whether you can use a Sefer Torah as a shroud? I'll give you the source.
Okay, I don't want to say lo raisi in araya or say lo zocher in araya that I don't remember. I use a Sefer Torah. The only situation I know is they wrapped Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion in a Sefer Torah.
No, that's a different step. He had no choice.
You're saying a puzzle Sefer Torah.
A puzzle Sefer Torah, right.
That's a shroud. That's a very, yeah, that's amazing, I know. Yeah. Fine, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm willing to go out on a limb and say the following. In Hilchos Avelos, in Yeridea, in between the Beis Yosef and the Mechaber, Ramah, Shach, Taz, and Kisvei Tshuva, I'm virtually certain that no such discussion is. That doesn't mean somebody else doesn't discuss it. I could be, and maybe I'm forgetting something to say, Chilla. But that sounds very unfamiliar to me. Okay. Anyway, so now the Gemara, we are up to the Gemara on the bottom of Chafkim on the days, and it's about six, seven lines from the bottom. The third word. Ba'ominei Rabbi Yosef bereid the Rabbi Nechunya may Rav Yehuda. So Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Nechunya, asked Rabbi Yehuda the following question. Mahu sheyaniach adam tfilov tachas merasho sov. Are you allowed, when you go to sleep at night, can you put your tefillin under your pillow, merasho sov, under your head? Now the Gemara continues. And this is Rabbi Yosef talking. Tachas margalosa lo gomi boimi. To put it underneath by your feet, I don't have to ask that question. Shinoe bohem minot bizayon. That's treating them with disrespect. Ki komi boimi, tachas rirashosa. What about under your head? Omar Le, Rabbi Huda responded, Hochi Omar Shmuel, mutar afilu ishto imo. Even if your wife is with you, you can put them under your pillow, which means, it's not just that academically your wife is with you, it means the person could be engaged in sexual intercourse. Okay. Then, that's what Shmuel said. Meisve, Gemara quotes from a braisa against Shmuel. Lo yaniach adam tzilav tachas margalosav. You can't put your tefillin by your feet. The nation knowing bohem derech bizayon. Apo manichon tachas derashosav. You can put them underneath, let's say, your pillow. However, the vaitza ishto imo, but if his wife was with him, Osir. But hoya makom shegavoa gimel tachin. Oh, namuch gimel tachin. If you have a place next to your bed, a shelf that's more than three tachim above the bed, or lower than three tachim from the bed, so then it's mother. Meaning it's in effect that tefillin are in a different place.
Different rishus of three tachim?
I don't want to call it, I mean for these purposes it's a different rishus. Let's leave it that for now. And the Gemara doesn't talk about here about the covering status. I would have guessed that you still have to have them covered, but to have them, even if they're covered in their thing, under your pillow, that's like being in the same rishus as you in a way that's inappropriate, independent of the covering. So now the Gemara says, Tufta de Shmuel Tufta. All right, Shmuel's wrong. Ishto Imo is different. If you're, if not Ishto Imo, you can put it underneath your pillow. Ishto Imo, you have to be in a slightly different, I don't know, call it Rishus for these purposes, slightly different place. Homa Rava, so Rava comes along and says something very interesting. Afal Gav de Tanya, Tufta de Shmuel, even though we said that the Brice is against Shmuel, there's no possible that way. Now, occasionally in Shas, the Gemara will have a state there, only a couple of places where the Gemara says Tufta and says Hilchasa, like that position, the Gemara will say Tufta, the Hilchasa. And they'll explain why really not, why the Tufta, I think, wasn't a good Tufta. Here the Gemara just says, Rabbi just says, it doesn't matter that the Brice is against him. My taima, going over to the top of Chassal and Amad Aleph, kol linaturidhu be'adit. It's worse for the tefillin to make him put them in a separate place where they might be exposed to the mice or the ganavim. It's better, that is worse for the tefillin from our vantage point than bidyonet, and the fact that it's under his pillow when he's engaged in sex with his wife. That apparently is worse. So even though it would seem to be a violation of Kiddush Amor, but at the end of the day, when we're concerned more about the physical preservation of the tefillin takes priority. Yes.
Money.
You know that there's a large black market for fake
toys. There's locks in every store.
Right? That's why they start putting coating on them.
Right.
Right. So you have to ask
them. Right?
So the truth is, if they're not in, they cannot even be Jewish.
Right.
Right. But you ask about the people who buy Sefer Torah without, you know, sometimes you could say someone bought a Sefer Torah, maybe they didn't realize it. But at a certain point, you know, when you're getting something very, very relatively cheap, you just start to ask questions about the provenance of it. So, anyway, so that's the answer. The answer is, I think I told this story before, but the short version is that religion is religion and business is business. That's the way a lot of so-called religious people think. I put that religious error in quotes. You know, people often say, they'll tell me about someone, you know, this person is not observant, he's not religious. And I usually often correct and say, that's not true. Any person is informed. They may or may not be religious, but I know a lot of people are not religious, and there are a lot of people in Oscar who are very religious.
At a Rahim, you know, one of the shows I go to, in the 1920s, there was a killer. He was hired for having killer, but he came to shul regularly, and he never killed on Shabbos.
Did they give him an aliyah?
He never
I
killed
don't know.
If he threatened the Gabbai, they gave him an aliyah.
Rabbi,
okay,
I send you a copy
fine.
Of it a couple of years ago.
So now the Gemara says, okay, now the Gemara says, unless it was partial, I hope he wasn't a Cohen one. I hope it still wasn't a Cohen.
If it's a Cohen, okay. It's like a there are two problems. Right?
Yes. Okay. So now the Gemara continues.
Killed from a distance.
Vehechi manach lehu. So where do you exactly put them? If you're putting them, the Rashosav means at the head of the bed. So the Gemara says, Amar of Yirmiya, bein kar lekes, that's between the pillow and the mattress. Shalo kineg and roshon. Not where your head is. So in other words, you've got a pillow. I don't know exactly what the pillows were like. Probably not that different. Our pillows. You have a pillow and you put your head down on this side, you put the pillow underneath the other side. So you don't see your head directly on top of the pillow.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Probably wake up with a stiff neck if you do it the other way.
Right.
You know, pillow does go with the head, you know, but not under your pillow.
Yeah,
you're
the other way, though.
Head.
No doubt.
Okay. So now the Gemara says, Mavahatani Rabbi Chia Manichan Bekova Tachas Marashosan. You put them in a koba, as Rashi says, it's their kisui, their bag, the tefillin vessel. You put them in it, under your head, which sounds like by your head, not just tachas marashosa, but by your head. So how can you do that? The Gemara says, thematically, the marasha, the koba, labar. It means literally the corner or the bulge of the koba is to the outside, meaning part of the thing will be under your head, part of the bag. But the part where you see the tefillin actually is hanging out, I guess, over the bed or something like that. It's not directly under your head. Okay. Rav Shisha Berei de Rav Idi. I'm sorry. Bar Kapora Sayer Lehu Bekilsa Umapik Lemoroshein Lebar. So a kilsa, where you have sometimes a marital bed would have a canopy around it. So he would sort of tie it up in that canopy and put it on the outside, not on the inside, basically, in the bed. Rav Shisha Braid Rav Idi, Manach Lahu Ashar Shifa, he would put it on a stool. Uporis Sudra Ilavayu. And he would put a sudar. He put a different covering. The sudar was not something that was specific to the, that wasn't miyuchat for the tefillin, presumably, and that's what he would do. Amar Rav Hamnuna grade Rav Yosef. Rav Hamnuna, the son of Rav Yosef, says, Zimna chada hava ka'emna kamei d'rava. The one time I was standing in the presence of Rav, Amar li, zil I see the tefillin, go bring me my tefillin. So he goes to Rav's house, to the room, I found it being kar l'kesa, shelo k'neged rosho. I found it between the cushion and the pillow, not where the head would, his head would be. V'yahava yadana, I understood the yom tzvi lahava. It must have been that his wife had gone to the mikvah the previous night. Ula agamuran halacha l'maisehu da'avar. He was, yeah, he wanted me to get his color, but he also was trying to teach me something in the process. This may strike us as a little bit strange. There is a gemara at the end of the, very near the end of the Masechta. Where Rav Kahana hit under Rav's bed, I believe it was Rav Kahana and Rav, and when Rav was with his wife, and it's a bizarre gemara. I always tell my students, if you ever did this to me, you would not live to tell the tale. So in this particular context, I think that's their jail. So, no, he'd be dead. So Rav Kahana makes some comments, Rav was talking more than he expected, or he said, I'm not even going to say what he said. When we get to that tomorrow, we'll see it. And he said, Kahana, Puk, what are you doing here? And he said, I need to learn halacha. The point of the Gemara, as strange as it is to us, is that, number one, halacha governs every aspect of our behavior. Number two, it's very important to transmit it. I don't know, I imagine, probably Rabbi Lichtenstein, you probably, in many years I'm gathering, taught the sex ed in Ramad. Is that right? Do I have that impression? It is a serious problem in our society, in our community, in a lot of families, that parents, the school does it, it's one thing, parents are supposed to transmit this to their children. I was discussing with my brother-in-law the issues of abortion and the issues going on now, and I said to him, I don't understand, before 15 weeks, how does anybody not know, not realize that they're pregnant, and at least not suspect? Right? They know they engage in sex. I'm not taking a stand on what the law should be, what the law is, but you would think that if you set the deadline the way the Mississippi law is at 15 weeks, who is it going to affect? And he said to him, you literally do not understand in so much of this country. People do not know anything about this. And so it's strange to us, it's particularly strange from our context. There is so much halacha that revolves around this. But what you do see from the Gemara is that they were much less, I don't want to say, sanua is not the word, but in the context of transmitting how you live life and the values by which you live in every arena of life, they were much less shy or embarrassed about it than we are. And there is something to be said for that. I suspect also, I don't know for sure, but as I mentioned before, they lived in one-room houses. So people didn't only have one child, which means that children had to have had something of a sense growing up of the process going on, because, you know, it's not like today where husband and wife almost always have their own bedroom, so the children have no idea, could have absolutely no idea what's going on. So this is relatively tame compared to the Gemara later, near the end of the Masechta, but it is sort of a similar idea. We're not, in today again, we are minhag is, and I don't know what the earliest origin of this, we tend to cover up when a woman goes to the mikvah, we make a big deal about that. And on the one hand, I understand the component of sneeze, but someone observed to me, I think my wife must have said that in South Africa, where her father is from, like Taras HaMishpacha disappeared, and one of the reasons was because mothers didn't talk to their daughters about it. They have absolutely no idea. That many, many children could easily have no clue that their mothers are going to the mikvah. So on the one hand, that there's an element of privacy that I understand. On the other hand, if children grow up, you see your parents from a Shabbos, you see that you only buy things that have a hashkacha on it. So, but if you have literally no idea, a person that their mother's going to mikvah, so you could literally not know that a major mysterious of Judaism, if you wouldn't even know that it exists. So it's,
that's one of the reasons I used to explain this to my classes when we started Tarasa. The purpose of Jewish sexual ethics was really to teach Tarasa. But I made it a much bigger thing because if I just was going to teach Nida and Mikvah, the kids would turn that transmitter off and they wouldn't listen. But I used to explain, David can tell you, I used to discuss how come Tara HaMishpacha was so 60, 70 years ago. And it wasn't just that the mikvahs were
filthy, yes.
That was a major piece, and we learned from the Sfardim not to do that, to make it really nice. But one of the major reasons is that parents did not talk to their children about that, and their children didn't know when their mother, they knew when their mother went out to a sister meeting.
And they came out with wet hair, and they never knew why.
Well, the old KJ membership applications used to ask if you observed Tarek from the Shvacha. That's what I remember you told
right.
me.
I told you that?
Yeah.
It
I don't remember that. But I was never a member.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I'm only 46 years. I remember that.
If you permit me for one moment, if I call on the comment that you made, many years ago, my first year in graduate school in Revel, I wrote a paper for Dr. Gurak. And the paper he did is a survey course in American Jewish history. And the project I took on is I took the Jewish press from the second half of the 1960s. And the paper was to really, the work was to read through it and see what I could tell about the American Jewish community behind. And one of the things that I observed, and my wife didn't believe me, we weren't married yet. Later she came to say, you were right. And it turns out you're now really confirming it. You saw this firsthand, this really before my time, that I always see like these advertisements of communities and new beautiful mikveh. And it was like, oh, you know, at some point it's like, oh, because otherwise people wouldn't go. So, okay.
Hey, reader.
I'm a reader.
Go ahead, Ram.
Hi. You mentioned abortion and the discussion, what's going on in the country about abortion. A question that my wife, who's an OBGYN, has, and I understand, why, in halacha, we have exceptions for abortion, if the mother's life, is in danger for one that I know of, obviously. Or if there's something in the life of the fetus, she says, but the point, the question is, why aren't we hearing Rabbeim speaking out and saying that abortion should be a religious matter or free choice matter so that people can follow their religion? And no one's piping up and saying, we do think that there are some times when it is important.
I'm torn as to whether to answer the question. I think probably everybody would like me to answer this question. I know if Rabbi Lipstein or Larry remember that the first Shabbos I came here, one of the topics, before I was the regular style resident, abortion was one of the topics. I'd be happy to give a longer shiur. Let me just say, I don't know why rabbis aren't speaking, but I'll just say that the issue is really, really complicated from a halachic perspective. It's really complicated because, on the one hand, most poskim, and I'm comfortable saying most poskim, and certainly those who are posting the shaila say that most people are asking, in halacha are much, much more lenient on abortion than the position of it's only to save the mother's life, only a danger to the mother's life. Most poskim who are answering, Rav Schefter and Rabbi Willig and Rav David Cohen in Brooklyn, in the previous generation, Sitz Eliezer, who was supposed to get to Shari, said, I'm much more maple than Philly Ramosha was. So on the one hand, from our vantage point, it's complicated. Our position is in some ways totally different. And we're not really pro-choice, but we don't believe the fetus is really a life, and we're much, much more lenient on abortion. We don't have a cavalier attitude towards it, on the one hand. On the other hand, it's complicated because when you're asking, well, why not leave it to people and their religious views, I'd ask you the following question. Supposing that the Peter Singers of the world had their way, and we would allow infanticide for severely disabled children, would you think it inappropriate for the rabbi to get to the pulpit and scream about it? I would think that we should all be protesting and marching, because it would be state-sanctioned murder. I understand, even though I totally disagree, and it ignores the Bible, I understand why the Catholic Church makes such a big deal of this issue, because they regard abortion as murder. And if we did, if we had such an unequivocal position on that, which we do not, and it's certainly against the simple reading of Parshas Mishpatim, as most Rishonim point out, but if we did, we should probably feel the same way, barring concerns. I some people have challenged this, but I heard growing up, and I was one of two people who told me this, that Rav Moshe, who was a big machmir on abortion, was opposed to legislation prohibiting it because he was afraid that it was giving sort of a leg, it was an entry point for Christianity to start to dictate American policy, even though Ramosha regarded abortion as a terrible thing. So that's what I heard. Some people have asked, you know, I know someone told me when he was alive, someone asked Rabbi Tendler a couple of years ago, he never heard Ramosha say it. Okay, that doesn't mean Ramosha didn't say it. So I think it's a really complicated issue, because if you really believe that life begins at conception, 40 days, whatever it is, then allowing abortion is allowing murder. And I shouldn't, just because for Peter Singer's, who's an atheist, but his religion, if you might call it, would say that, you know, a defective child is worth less than a healthy, you know, cow. So if Peter Singer's had their way in the world, I would think we should be marching in the streets protesting it. So the question now is, and there's no easy answer, of all the cultural wedge issues, you know, who is to decide when life starts? So I know that maybe the Catholic Church thinks one thing. We might think a different thing. I don't know what Muslims think. But it's really complicating negotiating this issue in the public sphere when it's not just a religious issue, it's a basic core ethical issue. And I don't know. It's complicated. You know. Rabbi, let's see.
Granting your point, I once was talking with the late Mayor Koch, who was very close to Cardinal O'Connor. And I had a little bit of a relationship with Cardinal O'Connor, considered him to be an incredibly righteous.
Real OAG strong.
He spoke to the school.
What?
He spoke to the
And I said, the only thing I understand about Cardinal O'Connor is how come he goes up to Albany periodically and twists arms of legislators to get them to vote a certain way on abortion. And he looked at me and said, because Cardinal O'Connor thinks that abortion is murder. That kind of stopped me right in my tracks.
Yeah.
But we don't say that.
Right.
Essentially, the post-gim today are basically that abortion is Havolah.
So Ramosha, you know, there certainly is a stream of thought that abortion, if he decided murder, that's not the dominant stream amongst post-gim. Now, and therefore we feel differently about it. So that's why it's really, really complicated. How do you, you know, it bothers me when the Catholic Church, you know, makes issues about birth control and, you know, in their hospitals for employees, not, you know, and they don't want to have to pay for it, because I feel like that's really a religious issue. That's not a core ethical issue. It's not a murder issue. But when it comes to abortion, it's so incredibly complicated. How you choose a morality in a multicultural society. When there are different views on an issue that's really, you know, we all subscribe to the notion of murder, and now the question is defining what the line is. Okay. But we could have a long issue at another time of that, but, so now the Gemara says, we're done with it, where you put the cell, at least for now. Rabbi Yosef, raised Rabbi Nachonim, Rabbi Yehuda. And this is a question that can come up. If two people are sleeping in the same bed, and remember, when people slept typically, I don't know what everybody does today, but back in the rabbinic period, people did not wear pajamas. When they went to sleep under the covers, they were wearing nothing. So the question is, there are two people sleeping there, and again, today, I think that we would generally never do this unless it's a husband and wife. And the Gemara is going to talk about husband and wife versus others, but the question is, Mahu shezei yafir panavik rakriyashma, shezei yafir panavik rakriyashma. Right? So you have two people, and it might be, let's say, it could be easily two men. Obviously, it's two men. If it's a husband and wife, it's two men, or two women. It's not a man and a woman, unless it's a parent and child, and a little child. And the Gemara will talk about how little and what is appropriate. And now you're talking, they're going to talk about what's reading kriyashma. They're not talking about the act of sleeping. So let's assume it's two men, and the Gemara in Kiddushin says that Shnei Ravokim should not sleep in one house, right? Two bachelors. Right? The concern was, I'll call it opportunistic homosexuality. And the question is, here you have two people sleeping there. Can they turn their backs to one another each week, Kriyashma? Meaning they're not, in effect, facing each other's erva. They're each other's private parts. So,
that they're not covered. There's no cover.
They're covered only by a sheet. But they're, one of the things we're going to see, for example, we're going to see later, there's a concept known as Libo Roa Esa Era.
I was wondering how that plays into this.
So, Tosa talks about it. One second. The concept of Libra Roes Erev for me, supposing I'm wearing just a gown, a robe, and I'm wearing nothing underneath, which means there's no separation between my private areas and my heart. I don't know if it's because the heart was seen as the seat of knowledge, but it refers to an anatomical heart. So there's a machlokas later in the Gemara whether or not Libo Roa Es Ha'erva is a problem to read Kriyashma. Read Kriyashma is a machlokas. Whether or not, if there's no separation between your heart and your private areas, is that a problem of called Libo Roa Es Ha'erva? The solution to the problem, that's where the gartel comes from. The gartel comes from by putting a belt around, so then there's no separation. For most Americans, most Westerners, if you wear underwear, so it solves that problem anyway, certainly because it goes around you. There's usually an elastic band and so on. So even though probably most Hasidim, I assume, wear underwear, but they also wear the gartel anyway, because they're just perfectly fine. But that's its purpose. It's to separate the two.
Okay, so
let's assume for the moment right now that Libo Roa Es Ha'erva is not a concern for Kriya Shema. It's one day. That's what Tosfos suggests here. And he gives, I think, two answers. It's the second Tosfos. And firstly, he says, firstly, his question, you see your own Erevah. He says, no. You put your head outside the sheet, which we normally do. But I guess people could have slept under the sheets as well. And then he says, Libo Roa Es Ha'erva, he says, this kind of holds its mother. It's not a problem. Reading Kriya Shema. So let's just leave it at that. But the problem is, your Erevah and the other person's Erevah are in the same space. The question is, can you turn around to face each other would be a problem. You might even be making, if it's a man, physical contact unintentionally. But what if you turn around? So Amar Lei, Rabbi Yehuda responded, this is another question of Rabbi Yosef Reid and Nechunya. He responded to, Rabbi Yehuda responded to him, Hachi Amar Shmuel va'afilu ishto ima. It's mutter. And even if it's his wife. Even if it's his wife.
It's meaning, mutter to turn your head.
What's that?
It's mutter to turn your head.
You turn your back to one another.
Right.
You're facing back to back. Or at least the person's reading Kriya Shema, they're facing the other way. So let's assume they turn both, maybe you have to have both turn back to back. And then it's even with his wife's mutter. Now, what the Gemara is going to focus on for the moment is not the specific position, but what is the relationship as two strangers versus husband and wife? Which are we more inclined to be lenient on? So the way Rabbi Yehuda responded was that two people, not husband and wife, let's say two men and two women, for sure it's not a problem, but even a husband and wife. Even a husband and wife. So Maskif La Rabbi Yosef, Ishto V'lami Bay Acher, Adaraba, Ishto Kegufo, Acher Lav Kegufo. So Rabbi Yosef responds, I don't know if this is the same Rabbi Yosef Reid Nechunya or it's the regular Rabbi Yosef, says to Rabbi Yehuda, what are you talking about? That's backwards. Ishto Kegufo, it should be less of a problem if it's a husband and wife. Now, why is that so? So one is tempted to see Ishto Kegufo is a halachic principle that comes up in a number of areas. What's that? Yes. Now, the Ishto Kegufo, here, as you'll see, does not mean what it means elsewhere. I want to give you sort of one example, I think more than the Hanukkah one, because Hanukkah is really near Ishu Beiso, so it doesn't matter who in the house fights. But the Gemara Sanhedrin has an absolutely fascinating discussion. There's a somewhat famous rivet about this, the Rush site, and is actually very significant in Halacha, in Hilchos Eidos. The Gemara says the following. If a person comes into Basin and says, so-and-so, Ploni Rivani, well, let me start with La'onsi. Someone comes in and sodomized me and against my will, forcibly, and he, the person who says he was sodomized, plus another person as a witness can get this person executed. Okay? Now, the Gemara then says, what about Ploni Ravani Lertzoni? What if the person comes in and says, he had consensual sodomy with me, and there's another witness. Can he and the other witness testify about the other guy? Obviously, he can't testify about himself. So one is, I think what Yosef says, that he's a Rasha, and a Rasha, the Torah says, I'll touch him, Rasha 8. You can't have a Rasha testify. And then Rav, I believe, comes along and says, no. That ain't other Mason Atzmo Rasha, and therefore you believe him when he says, Ploni was Rava somebody, but you don't believe in that with himself. So he and the other 8 say that such and such a person engaged in that at the time. So now, what's going on there? normally we say, if you walk into Basin and say that this man and my brother, you know, engaged in sodomy, your testimony will be current. You can't be an ape. We say, Eva Shabbatla Mitzasa Batla Ku. Eva Shabbatla Mitzasa Batla Ku. So since I can't accept that one of the parties was my brother, my testimony is thrown out. So the question is, how do you put these two together? So the right it says that one is that testifying about oneself is not egos. It's not that it's egos on a karub. Oh, the Gemara uses the expression adam karub itzah, but it doesn't mean you're a karub. It means you're so close that it's not even egos. In other words, if I testify about a stranger, that's egos shem. If I testify about a karub, that's egos suma. And if I testify about myself, that's not even egos. So we just don't even hear the fact that I said ploni rib ani. I don't hear that last part. I just hear ploni rabba sambad. The Gemara then asks the following question. It says, what if a person says ploni ba'al ishti? Do we say adam karav etzal atzma amrinan, but karav etzal ishta lo amrinan? Or do we say even karav adam etzal ishta? So when you first read the Gemara, before the Rebbe gave his whole interpretation, of course the person is a karav etzal ishta. What's the question? So the Rebbe says, no, the Gemara's question is because of ishto kegufo, your testimony about your wife is like testifying about yourself, means it's not testimony at all? Or do we say that? No. Adam karav etzal atzmo, yes. But karav etzal ishto, it's not self, and therefore it's like a regular karav, and you could accept the testimony. So that ishto kegufo really is a halachic statement that the relationship of husband and wife, it's like you become one person. What it means here, however, is not that. That's, in other words, what Yosef thought, that if two strangers it would be permissible, certainly a husband and wife. It's not, you could have said, the lumbus, that it's like one body, so you can be with your own body, so why, that's not what, that, at least Rashi doesn't say that way. Rashi writes here that, where's Rashi? Ishto kegufo, viragilba, lelekar hirhur kulehat. In other words, because that's a normal situation, so frequently a husband and wife will be sleeping together, exposed to him, but they're not thinking sexually because this is normal for them. So Rav Yosef thought that two strangers, like, you know that you're in a situation that was a little bit odd. It doesn't mean you can do anything wrong, but you're sensitive to the fact that this is not a typical situation and that you are unclothed and you're under the same thing as somebody else. Whereas with your wife, this is normal. You don't think about it. It doesn't interfere with your Kriya Shema since your erva is not touching one another. Therefore, it shouldn't be. That's what Rav Yosef says. It's more likely that it shouldn't be a problem. So that was Rav Yosef's question. The Gemara continues and says the following. Basically, we have another question against Shmuel. Shnayim sheyishenim b'mita achas. Zeh machzir pana v'kore, zeh machzir pana v'kore. We have one braisa that says two people. Doesn't say who they are. But there are two people sleeping in one bed. And they can do what is described. Turn around, you know, face each other back to back. And they could read Krishna. But the Tanya Acharisi, there's another Braisa, Hayoshen Vemita, Ubanav Uvnevesto Vetsido, if a person is sleeping in bed and he has children and other relatives in the same bed, that doesn't say anything about a wife. Lo Yikra Kriyashma and the Inkain Hayatalis Masekis Bene. You have to have some garment which separates between the two bodies. The Imhayu Banav Uvnevesto, if you're trying to, if the children are young enough, the Gemara will talk about when you're going to sleep later. Then you don't need the sheep. Shlomo, the Rabbi Yosef, Lokasha. How do you, the two prices contradict another. The first price says, two people in one bed, they just face back to back, and they can read Kriya Shema. The second price says that if you're with your children, other relatives, that you need a talis, you need a sheep that separates the two. So the Gemara says, the Shlomo, the Rabbi Yosef, Lokasha, it's easy to explain these two prices. Chobi Ishto, the first price that says, Shnayim, Shushem, Nita Ahas, just need to face opposite directions as a husband and wife. And then, Haba'achar, the second Braisa, is talking about anybody but the wife, right? Which is very plausible in the second Braisa. Now, on the Shmuel Kasha, how does Shmuel, who says that if Shmuel says that strangers are permitted, and certainly a wife, So here, the strangers, meaning the members of the relatives who are not the wife, are permitted. So how can the first brisa prohibit anybody? And it's certainly there's a contradiction here. Unless you say that the first brisa, I'm sorry, how can the second brisa be something permitted in the first brisa? How do you resolve the contradiction between the two? Right? Rabbi Yosef could say the first brisa is talking about your wife. That's why it's permitted. Everybody else is prohibited. But Shmuel can't say that. Even if the first brisa is talking about your wife, if others are prohibited, certainly the wife. So the Gemara says, Amar lecha Shmuel, Rabbi Yosef minicha. It doesn't work for Rabbi Yosef either. Shmuel would say to you, it wouldn't work for Rabbi Yosef. Why? Vehatanya. And the way Tosus explains, this is a different brisa, and you have to mend the girsa. Hayayashim v'mito v'ishto imo. Lo yikra kriyashma. Ela imkein hoysa taliso masekis v'neha. So there's another brisa, which explicitly, and Rashi thinks it's the previous brisa. It's the way we have the version. Now, Gemara, it's the very same brisa. Rashi just said that B'nai Beso includes his wife. And Tosus says, what are you talking about? B'nai Beso does not include his wife. So, and Tosus says it's very strange when the Gemara says the Hatanya, it's supposed to be quoting a new brisa. It wouldn't be referring to a brisa that we had already quoted and introducing it in this fashion. It would have said, by the way, the Ha-Katani, if it were referring to the earlier brisa. Instead, it says Latanya, so it's the new brisa. The Tosus, and I know the Rush has the girsa that way also, the Tosus says that the girsa is, Hoya Yashin Benitaso, it's the last Tosus, the Ishto Yashena Betido, Lo Yachter Pana Beyikra, and the Intain Hoysa Talis Mafseke, Beino Leveno. So it's in a brisa explicitly against Rabbi Yosef's interpretation. And you see that Ishto is Asura. So we have three brises now. We have a brisa that says Ishto is Asura, without a talis. Then we have a brisa that says Vanavu Bnei Briso, are Asur without a talis. And then we have a brisa that says two people sleeping in one bed just turn around and they can recreate from it. So once you have these three brises, there's obviously Machlokas HaTanaim and you can fix it however you want. So Ella, my Islachon Neymar, Ishto the Rabbi Yosef Tanaihi. For Rabbi Yosef, you'll say there's a Machlokas HaTanaim. What's the status of the wife? The first brisa that says Shnayim Shiyashen Vamita Achas can just turn around and read. That's the brisa that said that with your wife, it's okay. And the last brisa says it's not okay with your wife. So that's what you're going to say. I'll resolve it by saying, Levididami Tanahi, I'll say that the first brisa is referring to everybody, could be referring to everybody else. And the last brisa says with your wife, it's not okay. So in other words, you could basically fix it however you want to fix the brisa. Okay. In terms of Psak Halacha on this particular issue, there's a very interesting comment for the Rush. That's the last thing I'm going to do today. If you happen to have the Rush, great. If not, I'll read it just a few lines very carefully. He makes a very interesting comment about Talmudic methodology, about methodology in Psak. The Rush happens to be located in... it's in Simon Lamed Hay in the Rush.
Lamed
Hay? Lamed Hay in the third paragraph.
Lamed Zion in the Rush.
Okay. So in the middle of this paragraph, he says that the Rif Pasach Rav Alphas, the Rif Pasach is like Rav Yosef, the Ishto Kigufo, Umoto Lahach Sirpana Velikras.
The top of the left column.
So the Rif Pasach is like Rav Yosef, that it's more permissible with a wife, and it's only permissible with a wife. Aval acher lav kegufa hu v'asim. That's how the Rif Paskin. However, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, the Balatosis, the Rei Kostat, Kevin de lo hifzik tilchosa lo kishmo v'lo kvar b'yosei, since the Gemara never explicitly, there's more in the Gemara later, but the Gemara never gets to a clear conclusion, do we Paskin like Shmuel or not? Since the Gemara never clearly Paskins like one or the other, Avina l'chumra, we're machmir, we're stringent. Kibraisa de pliga ad Rav Yosef. Following that last brisa that argues on Rav Yosef, the lo yikra afilo ishto imo in ein talis nafsekes beno levino. You cannot read even with it to your wife if there's no garment separating. Why? Af al gav de ha'amora yesh lo koach l'shabesh ha'braisa kida amar rova la'el. The Amoraim have the right to reinterpret brises, as we said earlier with Rava, Afal Gav Beitost of Shmuel, even though Shmuel was rejected on the bottom of Chafimol and Beis by the previous halacha with the Tzilin, still Hilchas HaKavaseh, so the Amorayim do have that right. Hani Midli, that's only true, Hecha Deha Amora Yodea HaBraisa U'Mishavesh Osa. Only if the Amora knew the Braisa and chose to reinterpret it or reject it. Aval Im HaAmora Omer Davar Mishmara Dinashe, if the Amora says something on his own, the Nimtza Braisa Zalo Kavaseh, and then we find separately, because in our Gemara here, Shmuel's not around. Part of the conversation. Shmuel said something, but the Gemara only says, Amar Lecha Shmuel, what would Shmuel say to you? But Shmuel never heard the Braisa, and therefore, Samchinan Abraisa, we rely upon the Braisa. The Ilu Haya Yodea HaAmora HaBraisa Lo Hava Palagala. Because maybe, if the Amora had known the Braisa, he would have said, you know what, I'm wrong.
Like a Talmud of Bar Mishnah.
What's that?
Like a Talmud of Bar Mishnah.
No, not a Talmud Bar Mishnah.
The Amora was Talmud Bar Mishnah.
Okay, so what I was going to say actually is the following, that I'm trying to remember the instance this really comes up. In Choshen Mishpat, in Simen Lamed Chapei, where it talks about a dayan shita'a, a dayan, a judge who makes a mistake, a posek who makes a mistake in Sa'ah. So there's a very interesting discussion between the Baal Hamor and the Ravid about arguing on the Gaonim. And one of the things that's observed there is, the Baal Hamor said, of course you can argue on the Gaonim. Not in the Talmud, along the Talmud you can't argue it. Along the Gaonim you can argue it. But I believe the Ravid reacts very strongly. And I think the Rush comes and provides a kind of a Kasuba Shlishi compromise. He says that if someone is aware of the Gaonic Shita and they make their arguments based upon the Gemara and they want to disagree with the Gaonim, so then, that's not called a Torah B'dvar Mishnah. You're allowed to argue on the Gaonim. But if someone didn't know the opinion of the Gaonim, and then they ruled otherwise, so then that is rejected. So that's sort of the same idea. Like, if you knew something, sometimes you have the right to argue. You never heard the argument, so we can't really accept your opinion, because perhaps had you heard it, you would have in fact retracted. So that's what the Rush in Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam and the Rif paskin, like Shmuel, that Ishto Imo is permitted, but not anybody else. And then the Machaber himself says, V'yesh Omrim, that you should be mocking my wife, and he says, that Tov Lachos L'Dvaro, that it would be appropriate to file that. So even though the big three for Rav Yosef Karo, the Rambam and the Rif and the Rush, two of the big three, talk in one way, he says, it's appropriate to be mocking for the minority.
My father, Rav Yosef Karo, was sleeping in pajamas, they're still not sleeping. Meaning is that maybe it wasn't really a relevant, I don't know the answer.
I don't know. You have to Google it and see.
It's an easy chumra for him to say if you're sleeping pajamas all
the time. I would be surprised. I would imagine if I were a guessing person, pajamas are a thing of the last century or two. I'll tell you that underwear also is something of relatively recent vintage. So I think we do not realize how much our clothing habits have changed even in the last century plus.
Is this Kriya Shema Lamita or Kriya Shema to say the Mitzvah Doraita?
Wouldn't make a difference if it's Baruch Shemush, I think.
But is this an issue of Kirvur, or is this an issue of a Davrsha Bekdusha being in the same area as a Tzvar Erva?
So I think from Rashi it really sounds like it's a concern over Kirvur. Because, at least, in other words, clearly they face each other these times.
I don't mean Kirvur. I mean Kirvur getting in the way of your Kavana. Meaning, is this a problem of Kavana, or is this a problem of being in the proximity to Davar Shabbat?
I think what Rashi suggests, it sounds like from Rashi that it's a concern not of Kavana, but inappropriate Hihurim during Krishna. I think there are two kinds of things. There are Hihurim because I'm distracted,
right.
but thinking about, which color shirt I'm going to wear tomorrow is not, it's kind of neutral. Whereas the thinking about, the Dvar Erva is really deeply contradictory to reading Kriya Shema.
So maybe it's different if it's being Yosei or Mitzvah of Kriya Shema versus Kriya Shema Lamita. In other words, maybe this is the issue of Olmach Shemayim is not the same.
I'll have to see if I can find, I didn't see anything, at least my quick, when I was looking for the Rishonim, I didn't see anybody address this question. I'll have to take a look, see in the Shulchan Aruch whether it's explicated further. I'm not sure it will be. I would have thought it's not a question of, I'm thinking about the Yankees game.
Right.
And that means I don't have the Kavana of the Yotze Mitzvah properly. I would think it's really about, this is a thought that's truly inappropriate during the Dvarim Shabbat.
Rabbi Leader?
Yes.
Sorry. Halacha lemaisa, and I'm sorry to be so direct about it.
Yes.
So you're in bed with your wife in pajamas. Everyone's double layer, triple layer, whatever. Is it required? Stop, stop. Guys, grow up, seriously. Is it required or
come on,
preferred?
Marshall, this is double covering, triple covering, all right?
Or not, it's like tefillin. Or neither to face away from your spouse before you say Kriya Shema, or because of all the barriers between you, it does not matter in the modern era which way you're facing.
I think you don't need to face away at all, but you shouldn't. I would say it's also appropriate not to be in physical contact.
Got it. So there's like a no spooning rule.
Yes. I think that would be true. I think they would have agreed to that as well. They were talking about incidental contact.
Marshall, I think you have a couple standards on what's appropriate.
I understand. Oh. Of course he does. It's part of his shtick.
Oh, the Yalkut Shimoni said, kaf the kafi, and now I understand it.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, one other question. Is Gurak the one that wrote that book?
Hold on. What's the question?
You referred before to your teacher, Gurak. Is he the one that wrote the book, like, Modern American Orthodoxy or something like that? American Orthodoxy?
I think that, firstly, I would say frequently for myself, you might not realize when you got in the mirror, right? So you get into bed, all of a sudden you realize, you know what, I didn't say the three parshiyos of Kriya Shema. So if I want to be continuing the conversation with my wife, and I don't want to say Hamapil and Kriya Shema Lamita yet, so I'll get in bed. Now, as always, the danger I fall asleep and I forget. So if I forget, I'm not saying it's good to forget it, but that's not the end of the world because the person forgot to say Hamapil and Kriya Shema Lamita. But forgetting to say Kriya Shema when you said it Kodin Zvani, weren't you up to the Mithraisa, that's a much bigger deal. So I could say easily, I get into bed and all of a sudden I remember, oh yeah, I didn't read Kriya Shema. So I could try, I can either get out of bed or I can say, okay, let me say Kriya Shema now. So that's why I think why it comes up. That's all.
I think my mother would have said, it's not as fall. Don't be late. Get out.
But we are. Okay, Marshall, your last comment.
I was just asking, you mentioned your teacher before, Gurak. Did he write American, what is it, like, History of Modern Orthodoxy or something?
Probably. And I'm sure he's written been any number of books, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I once had a shiur for Schechter.